For SearchSecurity.com, I'm Rob Westervelt. You're listening to Security Wire Weekly for October 24th, 2007. This edition, we'll talk with security expert Adam Laurie about his research cracking radio frequency identification chips. Adam has created a device that can easily copy an RFID entry badge. Also, the news, the number of affected customers in the TJX data breach is worse than feared, and a group of technology vendors will make a push for more secure code. We'll start off this podcast with the top story. The number of accounts compromised by the security breach at TJX is far larger than the 45 million reported in recent months, according to the banks that are suing the retail giant. The Boston Globe reported that more than 94 million accounts were compromised in the breach, and that was according to court documents filed by the banking group suing TJX. The number includes 65 million Visa account numbers and 29 million MasterCard numbers. The banks are suing Framingham, Massachusetts-based TJX for the staggering cost of issuing new credit cards to those affected by the breach. TJX now has maintained that at least 45.7 million credit and debit cards were stolen over an 18-month period by hackers who managed to penetrate its network. The attackers began their assault on TJX by exploiting Wi-Fi weaknesses. Next, my interview on radio frequency identification security with security researcher Adam Laurie. But first, this message.
Mergers and acquisitions are common in today's rapidly changing business market. And before long, M&A activity will almost certainly have an effect on your organization's enterprise security. Don't be caught by surprise. Start preparing today by checking out SearchSecurity.com's Corporate Mergers and Acquisitions Learning Guide. Experts like Michael Cobb and Ed Skotis offer advice on how to successfully integrate compliance efforts, merge network security policies, defend disparate web application infrastructures, and much more. Master the policy practices and people problems of post-merger security. Check out the Corporate Mergers and Acquisitions Learning Guide today. Visit SearchSecurity.com and search for Mergers and Acquisitions. You'll be glad you did.
And we're back. Adam Laurie made headlines when he demonstrated a way to copy RFID-enabled passports. At Black Hat 2007, he demonstrated the security weaknesses of RFID-enabled entry badges, and he also showed a way to create a perfect copy of a badge without the need of a soldering iron. Now, I sat down with Adam to talk about his work, and here's what he had to say. What has been the response from vendors from your research?
Well, as I mentioned during the talk, the guys who actually make the readers are not very happy that I'm illustrating faults with their beloved RFID. So that's not been very positive. I haven't actually had any specific lock manufacturers or RFID system vendors come back and discuss things with me. There's been various toing and froing with the Home Office about the passports. We don't seem to talk to each other directly. We do it through the newspapers. But, you know, they come back with a, well, it's not that bad because blah, and then I go and prove that blah is actually not true.
Why is that? Do they see you as this renegade? This? I mean, what is it that they don't communicate with the security researchers? Why wouldn't they?
I think that's pretty typical. You know, big business doesn't like to be told it's got things wrong. They have a lot to lose by admitting that it's bad. You know, they've deployed millions and millions of pounds worth of equipment all over the world to do this stuff, and you know, millions of man years of, or you know, hundreds of man years of research to get this going. And actually, that's one of the things that really worries me. That the more backing there is for a system simply because of its cost, the harder it becomes for you to defend against it. Because if someone manages to fake my biometric ID and goes across a border and commits a heinous crime, which I'm then accused of, it's very difficult for me to actually prove that that biometric system is flawed if the entire world is standing behind it saying, no, this is perfect, it's infallible. But the reason they're doing that is because they've spent millions on it and they don't want to admit they got it wrong and they don't want to spend the money to get it right. So it's much easier for them to throw me in jail and carry on with the pretense that their system is secure than it would be to say, okay, we're going to have to strip out this multi-billion dollar system that we've built.
Let's just talk a little bit about that. Aren't some countries shielding the passports?
The only country I've seen that actually shields the passport is the US. So it's built into your passport cover. If it's fully closed, then it's shielded. But as we've demonstrated, if it's very slightly open, and I mean only as open as it would be if you dropped it on the table and let it naturally spring open, millimeters, it actually seems to enhance the signal. So it makes it better for a reader that's going from a remote distance.
In general, how far away would you have to be to be able to pick that up?
The furthest I've heard of an RFID tag being read from was 69 feet, and that was done by Flexilis a couple of years ago at DEFCON 12, actually, on the roof of the Alexis Park. But they had a really big antenna, and they were aiming it, you know, directly at the tag. So that's a very theoretical scenario. You never get that in real life. But you don't necessarily have to be far away. I mean, I can stick a couple of gates on a doorway, and everyone who walks between those gates is going to get read. So I'll get the keys out of their pocket as they walk through. Or I wire wrap the doorway so the whole entire doorway becomes an antenna. You cannot get through it without walking through my antenna. So, distance isn't necessarily the object.
Let's talk about what you demonstrated today. You cloned a tag, and it's the first clone that is completely identical?
Basically, as I tried to explain in the talk, the technology is designed to do this. All I've done is expose the fact that a standard tag, like a Q5, can emulate another tag, like an EM4102.
Without a giant circuitry board of some kind.
Correct. So, yeah, without having to build any circuits or have, you know, funny-looking devices, you've actually produced a door tag that looks exactly like the original and has the same idea as the original. But that's what that tag was designed for. So all I've done is kind of, you know, work my way through the industry lies and come to the end and said, well, hang on a minute. You know, you're producing devices that are designed to make it possible for a vendor to set the ID to any number he wants and sell it to a customer, but you're telling the customer that that ID is cast in stone and could never be duplicated. And those two statements are completely incompatible, and I've just, you know, gone beyond the theory to the practical and written the software that demonstrates that and published it. That software is commercially available and installed in thousands of RFID chip supplier chains all over the world. So, you know, within the industry, everyone knows this. This is nothing new to them.
And these are the passive or the dumb cards that you talk about, correct?
Yeah, so this is the cards that just spit out an ID number. These are the cards that just spit out a unique number. So the card will literally say 1234. That's my number. So think of it like a barcode. If I can see your barcode, take a photograph of your barcode, I can produce a duplicate. And then if you had a security system that you just held up a barcode and the door opened, it wouldn't be very secure because I can just look at your barcode, copy it, open your door. This is exactly the same. I'm looking at your RFID tag with an electronic reader, seeing what it looks like or what number it gives me, and then producing another tag that has the same number, which will then open your door.
How about encryption, though? I mean, you're able to get by encryption as well, right? You demonstrated that with the passport.
Right. The problem with the encryption on the passport, I'm not really defeating the encryption per se. What I'm saying here is that the keys they use to encrypt the authentication tokens are not sufficiently strong. They've used a key space which is made up of information that's too easy to derive from other sources. So I can find out what your date of birth is, and that makes up six digits of the key. I can find out the expiry date of the passport. That's another six digits of the key. The passports tend to be issued sequentially, so there's not a lot left that I have to brute force. It's all right there. So instead of being billions of combinations that I would have to brute force, I'm down to a few thousand or a few tens of thousands.
And finally this week, a group of technology vendors, including Microsoft and Symantec, joined forces to launch an organization devoted to finding ways to improve the quality and reliability of software. The group, dubbed SafeCode, that Software Assurance Forum for Excellence in Code, includes EMC, SAP, and Juniper Networks, and the organization will be headed by Paul Kurtz. He's a security industry veteran with years of experience in Washington, who's also helped found the Cybersecurity Industry Alliance. The goals of the organization center around the need for better education of developers on safe coding practices, whether it's at the university level or in the professional setting. SafeCode officials plan to work with software vendors, colleges and universities, and others to raise awareness about the need for more secure code and evangelize some of the methods that are known to work. The organization will form three advisory groups, one each comprising representatives from government, academia, and critical infrastructure, and SafeCode will work with each group to help address the unique requirements and challenges they have. Paul Kurtz said he wants the organization to be a bridge between the technical side of the house and the non-technical side, and the ideas have to make sense to policymakers as well as developers. Well, that ends this edition of Security Wire Weekly. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts at our podcast landing page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. And as always, you can get the latest news and information at our news page at searchsecurity.com/news. For now, I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.